Okay, so last week we started to discuss the rebellion, the act of rebellion of Avshalom, and we started out by noting that, you know, part of the strategy here is for Avshalom to present himself as the ultimate man of the people. And he does that in four different ways, as the Abravanel points out, and as we saw, and he gets up every single morning to encounter people who are coming for various grievances. You know, when people have a grievance, you know, they're in a kind of a vulnerable state, and they really need, you know, some support. So he was, you know, in a sense, utilizing people's vulnerability for his own gain, and he would do this on a daily basis. And secondly, you know, he would make this kind of, you know, small talk with them, and he would ask them where they're from, and he would really make it his business to engage them as if he were really there to help them. And not only that, but he would, you know, talk about Re'ei Dvaracha, Nechonim V'Tovim, and he would give them encouragement. The Abravanel thinks that he also gave them maybe some advice, you know, as to how to, you know, try to advance their claims. And then in addition to that, you know, he would say, V'shomea ein lecham eis hamelech, that nobody's really going to pay attention to you. Nobody's interested, unfortunately, in giving you your, you know, your hearing. And when somebody has a grievance, to say to them that, you know, there's, you really deserve, you deserve better. So that obviously has an impact, because the person feels like, okay, you know, nobody really is taking me seriously, but, you know, this person, you know, he's willing to hear me out. And again, it's a way of appealing to somebody in a very vulnerable position, and also as a way of decrying his own father. Now, we noted last week that it's not a surprise that he chooses this line, because, you know, perhaps he felt that he was disregarded, that he was ignored, you know, by his father when whatever happened to Tamar happened. And then, you know, when he came back to Yerushalayim, his father didn't interact with him. So he certainly has this, you know, chip on his shoulder in terms of his Shomea in Lecha Me'eis HaMelech. And then the final, you know, straw is that when, you know, Avshalom being the crown prince, and people would, you know, sort of prostrate themselves to him as you would a royal figure. So the response that Avshalom, you know, got is he wouldn't let them, you know, bow, and instead he would take them and kiss them, you know, as if he was just their humble servant. And it was, you know, pure populism. And at the same time as he was doing this, and the term that the Navi uses is a very important term. It says that he really deceived them. The pasuk again says Vayiganev Avshalom es lev anshei Yisrael, that he deceived them, he manipulated them, and it's a very, very important pasuk in terms of establishing, you know, the kind of you know, manipulation and deceit that was going on here, and it was and this is the one final point to review, specifically in the context of Avshalom being anything but, you know, truly humble, because the opening pasuk tells us Vayaslo Avshalom Mirkava Visusim Vachamishim Ish Ratzim Lefanav. There was chariots, there were horses, there were 50 foot soldiers running in front of him. So it wasn't exactly some grand display of humility. Okay, so with that introduction, so we have the following Vayhimi Ketzar Ba'im Shana, and there's. It was at the end of a 40-year period. According to Rashi, it's 40 years since the Jewish people approached Shmuel and requested a king at this point. And we know that the total length of David's reign is 40 years. There are other interpretations that say David HaMelech was getting very close to the end of the line. Vayhimi ketzar ba'im shana vayomer Avshalom el HaMelech el chana vashalem es nidri asher nadarti la'ashem b'chevron. Allow me, please, to take leave and to go to Hebron. And as we noted last week, towards the very end, of course, that's where David HaMelech started out as the king, as the tribal king of Yehuda, his native tribe, for 7 years and 6 months. He was in Hebron. So Avshalom, you know, says, I need to go to Hebron, as if, you know, his father's place of origin is really important to him. Kineder nadar avdecha b'shivti b'gishur ba'aram limor im yashov yishiveni Hashem Yerushalayim ve'avati es Hashem. As I made an oath there, you know, when I was in exile, that if God would bring me back to Jerusalem, then I would serve Hashem, you know, in this context. So again, he's both utilizing this place that obviously has a great deal of emotional significance for his father, against his father, and he's also putting it in these religious terms. Vayomer lo hamelech, lech b'shalom, go in peace, vayakom, vayelech chevrona, and Avshalom goes to Hebron. Vayishlach Avshalom miraglim v'chol shivtei Yisrael limor. Now Avshalom had sent spies all over the Jewish people, okay? And he said, Kishamachem es kol ha-shofar, when you hear the sound of the shofar, the sound of the shofar, which of course takes us back to Matan Torah, the sound of the shofar, which takes us back to the fall of Yericho, always very significant. And especially the sound of the shofar, that really, you know, especially in the context of the Yovel, the Jubilee year, that announces, you know, the arrival of a new era, of a new epoch, a new generation. So when the shofar is sounded, V'amartem malach Avshalom b'chevron, everybody should say, Avshalom has been appointed the king in Chevron. And I would submit to you that there's a kind of a deliberate ambiguity about all of this, because if Avshalom is the king in Chevron, the average person might simply, you know, conclude that this is, you know, David has laid a succession plan in his lifetime. He's allowed his son to take over. How else could Avshalom, he's not doing this, you know, in some other tribal area. He's doing this in his father's backyard, where his father started off as king. So what Avshalom is really doing is sort of laying the groundwork for a bloodless coup, where he's positioning himself as his father's successor. It's just that David, you know, is the last to know. V'Avshalom halchu masayim ish miYerushalayim kruim v'holchim l'tumam v'lo yadu kol davar. And speaking of people not really even knowing what's going on here, 200 men were sent in front of Avshalom from Yerushalayim, and they were calling in front of him, and they were the coup without even realizing it. Vayishlach Avshalom et Achitofel Giloni, Yoetz David Meiro Migilo, Bizavcho et Hazvachim, Vayhi Akesher Amitz, the conspiracy was very strong, Ve'am Holech Varav et Avshalom. So Achitofel is going to be a major figure in the story. He's David's chief advisor, and Avshalom had sent a message to him that he would not be around so that David couldn't seek his counsel. His counsel would have been particularly valuable to David in this moment of crisis. And the people are building all around Avshalom. Vayavo ha-magid el David lemor. And finally, David is informed that there are all these people saying Avshalom is the king. And again, many of them, as explicitly indicated in the Navi, simply had no idea that they were fomenting a coup against David's wishes. So vayavo ha-magid el David lemor, haya levish Yisrael acharei Avshalom. Avshalom has captured the heart of the nation. So David says to his inner circle, the few people that remain with him in Yerushalayim, Kumu v'nivracha ki lo si'alanu pleitam ibnei Avshalom. This is the first time that David has said it out loud. We have to run now, because if we stay here, you do not know what violence Avshalom is capable of. Ki lo si'alanu pleitam ibnei Avshalom, maharu laleches, pen yimaher, Vihi siganu, vidia chalenu es haraga, vihi kahair lefi charev. Because what's going to happen is if he catches us here, he's going to use it as an excuse to say that the entire city was in rebellion and many innocents will die. So we have a critical, critical idea here that David is acting to abandon Yerushalayim, to abandon his seat of power, because he's very concerned about the collateral damage. God forbid, if Avshalom arrives and David is still there, Avshalom can present the innocent civilians of Yerushalayim as if somehow, you know, they're part of David's, you know, force. And v'ikaha ir lefi charev. Vayomu avdei hamelech al hamelech. So David HaMelech's closest advisors say to him, Kechol asher yivchar Adoni HaMelech, whatever you say, hinei avadecha. And they explicitly referred him as the Melech. In other words, you're not the Melech because you're on the throne. You're not the Melech because you're in Yerushalayim. You're not the Melech just because the most of the people think that you're the Melech, because pretty soon none of that will be true. But to us, you'll always be the Melech. Adoni HaMelech, hinei avadecha. We are your servants. Vayetze HaMelech. Again, in the Navi, he's very pointedly referring to him as the Melech. V'chol beiso biraglav, v'yazov ha-melech, et eser ha-nashim pilagshim lishmor ha-bayit. That will be a very important point for us next week, the role of these nashim pilagshim. David's harem is left there, quote-unquote, to guard the house. Now, guarding here wouldn't mean in the military sense, but at least to establish, right, a certain presence. And this is going to test the outer boundaries of Avshalom's inhibitions or lack thereof. Vayitze ha-melech v'chol ha'am biraglav v'yamdu beit ha-mirchak. So the melech goes out, and they're literally marching out on foot. And this is all by way of contrast with Avshalom. We should note again at the beginning of the perek where it says that Avshalom had 50 men running in front of him, and horses and chariots, and David, again, in his own simplicity, that's always been his hallmark, and people were simply passing by him, and it's a beautiful image of David standing and waiting to make sure that people crossed over safely. These were David's personal guards, and people that came all the way from Gat, who were loyal from David, all the way from the Eretz Plishtim. Shesh Meorish, David is back. And this takes us all the way, you know, all the way back to the time when he was running away from Shaul with exactly this number of men, 600 men. Shesh Meorish, Asher Bo, Viraglo, Migat, Ovrim, Al Pnei HaMelech, right? And they were passing in front of David, and David puts himself into exile. So, we have here the next phase of Absalom's rebellion. Again, the first phase was Absalom, you know, establishing, you know, this populist rapport, going out every single day, engaging the people in this deception. And then, of course, the second layer of deception is the deception of his father, where he says to his father, I have a spiritual act, a religious act that I need to perform in Hebron, because I took an oath unto God when I was in exile, saying that if God would bring me back to Yerushalayim, then I would fulfill my neder. And that resonates with David. So I think it's very important to pause here and to discuss, you know, the deception of the father. Absalom deceives his father. Of course, he uses Hebron to launch his coup, to position himself as a newer, younger, more in touch with the people version of his father. He goes back to Hebron, and David ends up deposed. The specific excuse that Absalom gave, that he had taken upon himself a neder, an oath, a religious obligation, that's something that resonates with David. Because that's something that David would take very, very seriously. Right? As the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Nidarai l'Hashem Hashalem, Negdana l'chol amo. I must fulfill my oath unto God in front of the entire people. Nidarai l'Hashem Hashalem. I must fulfill the oath unto God. And so when Absalom uses that so cynically against his father, he's showing that there's really nothing that will stop him from achieving his ambitions. He knows his father very well. And he knows that this tactic will resonate with his father, just in the sense, you know, of David HaMelech taking seriously a commitment. A commitment to David is not a small thing. A commitment to David is a very sacred thing. And had it been David who was exiled from Yerushalayim, you can be sure that's exactly what he would have done. Going all the way back to the tradition of Jacob. When Yaakov had to leave Israel, right, he took the neder. And he said, Im yelo kimi madi, if God will be with me, Ushmarani baderach hazah asher anochi holeich, and will care for me on this path that I trod on now. Vishavti vishalom el beit avi, and he'll bring me back in peace to my father's house. Avshalom is pretending like he's some kind of a modern day Jacob. He's signaling to his father, the only thing, Dad, that I thought about all those years in exile was if God would bring me back to you. Vishavti vishalom el beit avi, v'haya Hashem li lelokim, then Hashem would be my God. But of course, it couldn't be further from the truth. He's using so cynically the model, the paradigm of Yaakov, who yearned to return to the land of Israel, to his parents. He's using that against David in the most cynical of ways to launch a rebellion against his father. And specifically to launch a rebellion in such a way that it would appear, as the Navi says, that people had no idea that this was a coup. After all, Avshalom had been brought back. It seems like all of the fences have been mended. He's going to Hebron. Achitofel, David's closest advisor. Hakesra meets Mod. There's no way it could happen without David's knowledge. The average person, as the Navi says, was completely and utterly deceived. They couldn't possibly have known that this was not David's wish until it would be too late, until David would literally be marching out of the city Yerushalayim on foot. And so we return to the motif. David is not perfect. And David has a major failing, which leads to a series of failings in the context of Bathsheba. And this is what Natan HaNavi told him, that there would be ra'ah mi beitecha, that there would be trouble in his home. And this is certainly trouble. Amnon, Tamar, Avshalom. But there's one thing that David would never be capable of. David would never be capable of treating the Jewish people like this. Avshalom uses the people, and David was for the people. And in the end of the day, there are only two kinds of leaders. In the end of the day, either a leader believes that the people exist to serve him, or the leader believes that he exists to serve the people. It's one or the other. David, in his heart, ever the shepherd, understood himself in one way: I am here to serve the people. Avshalom wants power for exactly the opposite reason, so that the people can serve him. It can't be both. Power is not the question. The king is vested with enormous power in the system of Torah. But the question is, for what purpose? If you go back to the Torah's image of who the melech should be, with no excess, not in money, not in horses, not in wives, carrying the Sefer Torah around at all times so that he does not grow haughty, Levilti rum levavo me'echav, so that he doesn't grow arrogant relative to his people. He has more power than they do, as he needs. Som tasim alecha melech, comments the Gemara, shetehei imaso alecha, that he should be an object of reverence, more than just respect. But at the end of the day, it's to serve the people. And Avshalom is a complete anathema from the Torah's point of view, insofar as Avshalom reflects the antithesis of the Torah's point of view about power and monarchy. His belief is that the people would exist to serve him. He's nothing like his father. He can go to Hebron, but it doesn't make a bit of a difference. He can recruit his father's closest advisor, but it doesn't make him his father. All leaders need to be evaluated by this single standard. Why do they want this position? The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us, v'chol ha'oskim imatzibor, not even just a king, but anyone in any position of authority, v'chol ha'oskim imatzibor yioskim imohem l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, meaning for the service of the people, and not so that the people will serve them. And with Avshalom, the tell was in the very beginning. Even before he went to Hebron, even before he started with this, song and dance that he was doing every morning outside of the Shar, outside of the Beit Din. When Avshalom took the horses and took the chariots and 50 men running in front of him, you could never imagine David doing that. It's just unfathomable to show up in that kind of a motorcade. It just wasn't him. Final point. When David evacuates the city, David says, we have to get out of here. You don't know what Avshalom is capable of. I don't think that David figured that out in that moment. We've been talking about for many weeks how David was rendered very passive in the face of the aftermath of the sin of Bathsheba. He felt that he was in no position to exert his leadership in his household. He's not acting as a king might, or perhaps as a king should. But what's important here in this line when he says we have to quickly get out of the city because Avshalom will destroy everything in his path if he gets here, and he can, present things as if, the people had threatened, him or whatever it is that he had no choice but to just, and David is concerned for the people because David is the leader that exists to serve the people. And David just says it out loud. He says, Avshalom will come and destroy everything. And that's an important moment because that reaffirms that the entire time, even though David has been very, very quiet, that David knows who Avshalom is. It doesn't mean he wasn't conflicted. Of course he was conflicted. It's his son. But he understands very well what kind of violence and aggression that Avshalom is perfectly capable of performing. And when he says it out loud, it tells us as the readers that he's known it the whole time. His inaction wasn't the result of some naivete or some misunderstanding. It was a result of a conflict of a father who loved his son, even though that son was wayward and in many ways evil. And it puts us in touch with the pain that must have been David's to know deep down in his heart, even if he wasn't going to say it out loud until he absolutely had to, that this son of his was violent, was capable of terrible things. He's known it the whole time. He's only saying it out loud now. You know, the Gemara comments is a very poignant remark. Kasha tar bezra b'soch beso shel adam yoser mimelchames gog u'magog. And it brings that concept that trouble in a person's home is worse than any external strife, even the eschatological battles of Gog and Magog. Because when there's trouble in a person's home, Tarbos Ra B'soch Beso Shel Adam, the level of pain, you're dealing with something external, people that you're not invested in, it's completely different. And you're dealing with your own son, the pain is that much greater. For David, what's a good outcome here? That he'll be able to survive this rebellion and that his son will, you know, end up the way people who rebel against the king do? Or that he'll end up dead? This is not a situation where there can be a win for David, because that's the way things are when we're talking about strife within the family. So that's what the Mizmor Tehillim says. Mizmor le David bevarcho mipnei Avshalom ben bino, Hashem marabu tzarai, rabim kamim alai, rabim omrim lenafshi, en yeshua salo v'elohim sela, that there's nobody left. People are saying that there's no hope for me. David HaMelech must have felt so low, so helpless in this moment. What could possibly be a good outcome? David had a hard life. This is a very hard thing. To be deposed by one son, to know that one raised this person, to understand and to have to say out loud, you know, my son is going to come here and murder the entire city. We can't minimize what that must have been like for him. As we move forward, you know, with Absalom's rebellion, we'll pay very careful attention to that. Because inasmuch as there's a political event unfolding, for David, it's far beyond that. It's a reckoning, not just at the level of his role as king, but it's a reckoning at the level of his role as father. Other people who may have trouble in their family can experience it in a more private way. The king doesn't have that privilege. And we as the readers, we get to experience that through David. Okay, so with that, we will hold it up here, and we will continue, God willing, next week with the next installment of Avshalom's Rebellion. Any questions? Let's pause here.